Welcome to the Nutrition Science Podcast, where we help you cut through the noise and make informed, science-based decisions about nutrition and your health. Welcome back to the Nutrition Science Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Chavez. And today I have a special episode. I'm going to be interviewing my friend, Patrick McCarthy. Patrick is a sports nutritionist or performance nutritionist for athletes, particularly high-level basketball players. So he works with college athletes, he works with pro athletes, he works with people who are trying to get into college. And I know a lot of you who are listening to this right now, you may think this may not be the episode for me. And I want to encourage you to tune in. If you don't consider yourself an athlete, this episode is still going to be extremely valuable for you. And what we're going to discuss today is performance nutrition, not necessarily sports nutrition, but what can we pay attention to help us to perform day to day better on a regular basis. And this episode ended up going a little bit longer than most of the previous episodes. I hope you guys enjoy it though. Let me know. I'm going to be posting this episode to YouTube. So if you're a regular listener of the show, go over to YouTube and subscribe to my channel. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you just search Dr. Adrian Chavez on YouTube, you should be able to find my page. And go and subscribe to my page. And I'm going to start posting all of the episodes on YouTube. And what that's going to allow is if you have any comments, if you have any additional questions, you can go ahead and leave those on the YouTube video and I'll get a notification of that. And what I want you to do is if you enjoy these interview episodes being a little bit longer, I know I've tried to normally keep the episode short and I try to keep them succinct when I'm talking about a specific topic because I don't want to go on and on and on, not get to the points. But sometimes with these interview episodes, a little bit of conversation might be helpful, especially in this case, you'll hear in this interview, I start asking specific questions about my own nutrition and how I'm structuring it. And Pat gives me some advice that I think is going to be very helpful for me and when I start to implement that. So I think that adds a little bit of value. And so the episodes will go a little bit longer when I do these types of interviews where some questions need to go back and forth. And sometimes we intertwine a little bit of story and stuff as well. So please let me know on the YouTube video if you enjoy these episodes. Also, if you are a regular listener and you're enjoying the show and you haven't left a review already, I would really, really appreciate it if you went and did that. So the podcast has continued to climb in the rankings and that's really cool to see. And that's completely because of you all sharing it with others and leaving reviews. And that is allowing this podcast to reach more people. And this is really excited to see. I want more people to get access to the information that I'm putting out. I've said this many times. I don't know if you guys have heard me talk about this before, but my goal with this podcast is to pretty much put every piece of nutrition information that someone would need to know in order to live a healthy life. And you can just go through my podcast and get everything you would need to know in order to go grocery shopping, make choices, you know, set up your nutrition, your calories, your protein, understand why fiber is important, what types of fiber. I cover all this stuff. So if you haven't already, I recommend going back to previous podcast episodes and listening to those and finding the episodes that you're curious about. I talk about collagen. I talk about omega-3. And so I would go to those previous episodes because this podcast is designed to be an archive of useful information that you can just go back and learn from. And if you go through them all, you're going to learn quite a bit about nutrition and you're going to feel much more confident with your nutrition. So if you haven't listened to those podcasts already, I recommend going and doing that. And if you have listened to a lot of them and you enjoy the show, I would really appreciate it if you would go leave a review. So with that said, we'll go ahead and get into the episode with my good friend, Pat McCarthy. Welcome back to the Nutrition Science Podcast. I am here with my friend, Patrick McCarthy, and today we're going to be talking about sports nutrition, and we're going to be talking about performance nutrition. Patrick has a master's degree in nutrition and also is specialized in working with athletes. He currently works with basketball players. He works at Impact Academy in Las Vegas, which he does the nutrition for elite athletes. So he's really well-versed in performance nutrition, also works with his own clients, so regular people, not athletes as well, on how to fuel for the day-to-day life, exercise. So we'll talk a little bit about all of that as well. And I'm really excited to have Patrick on today. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. And like, just before we hop in, that little caveat you put at the end that I work with regular people. Today, I'm a sports nutritionist. But if you're listening to this and you're saying, oh, maybe I'll skip this episode because I'm not really interested in sports nutrition, a lot of the things we'll talk about, they apply to general individuals. If you just go to the gym a couple of times a week, we're going to talk about how to optimize your performance. So I'm taking some of the strategies, yes, we implement with athletes, but we're going to actually break them down so that you can use them as well. So it absolutely is for you. Keep listening.
I'm glad you put that in. And that's why I put that in at the end as well, because
yeah.
When people hear sports performance nutrition, sometimes we get turned away from that. And like you said, performance is about more than just going out and playing a game. Performance is about having energy throughout your day, being able to fuel your workouts, being able to, you know, go out and give a seven hour seminar and be able to, you know, perform during that. That's performance as well. So that's why I like the way that you say performance nutrition instead of sports nutritionist. I noticed that in the way that you talk about your own title. And that's why I mentioned it as well. And that's why I wanted to say that, because, yeah, it's definitely this applies to everyone. Like the things that we're going to discuss today, which is, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, working out and all of that. But performance is definitely like universal.
Absolutely. And like the crux of it, Adrian, is the shift that this kind of this field gives you is, what do I need to put in my body? What do I need to add instead of what do I need to take away? When we're talking about body composition and weight loss and improving health, a lot of the conversations, I mean, you're different. That's why I love your content and your message online. But a lot of the messaging out there is, what do I need to take away? You know, with performance nutrition, we're talking about putting more in. So, and weight loss is a part of that, you know, that can be a part of that. And there's a time and a place for taking things away for sure. But with the people I work with, and just like you say, they might be working in an office, they might be, you know, a CEO who has to give presentations, they might be a single parent. All of those things are performance, you know, you want to optimize your performance in that. And we're talking about, you know, getting a breakfast in when these people typically skip breakfast, or, you know, making sure you're prioritizing your meal times. We'll get into all that, but adding instead of subtracting, that's like the main message of performance nutrition for me, I feel like.
I love that. And because, like you said, so much of nutrition comes from this subtraction standpoint. What shouldn't we eat? What do we need to cut out? How do we lose weight? And I've always, you know, kind of approached nutrition from this, you know, performance side of things. And I've never thought about it in that way. But like, what can I add in to improve things? And that's definitely how I try to talk about it. So let's get started with talking a little bit about your background. So what got you into nutrition? What got you into specifically performance nutrition? Like, what was your background leading up to getting into this topic?
Yeah, it's funny because it's actually very similar. We were just talking before we went live, and you were telling me you did exercise science, and then you came across nutrition. Exact same with me. So in Ireland, that's where I kind of went to school. That's where I went to college. I was doing sports science because I was a basketball player, very interested. I wanted to be, you know, in the performance team on a professional sports club. And I think it was, and at the time I was playing like semi-professional basketball. So we have a high level of basketball in Ireland. It's the Super League. It's not completely professional. Most of the Irish players don't get paid. But at the time, I was constantly going through all these different diets. You know, I was doing intermittent fasting. I was doing the ketogenic diet. I went vegan for a while. I had no idea. All I was trying to do was take things out of my diet, right? As an athlete. And I did, as part of exercise science, we had one module. I think it was in my third year. We had one module in sports nutrition. So we skipped all the basics. Like, we didn't do fundamentals of nutrition. We didn't do energy balance. Straight to sports nutrition. And I was studying it. And I was like, holy shit, I could actually do this as part of my schooling. This is the stuff I'm reading outside of school, you know? And I had that shift of, wait, I need to actually add stuff in to perform better on the court. I need to add, you know, a snack before the game. Oh, I don't need to eat a pizza every night before the game. Like, I could just, you know, bump up my carbohydrate intake the days before. All of this stuff just really resonated with me. And I actually had a PhD lined up, a fully funded PhD lined up straight out of my bachelor's in sports psychology. And I was like, nah, I'm going into nutrition. I fell in love with it. So I went and I got my master's in human nutrition in Denmark, which was just an amazing experience to be in Scandinavia for a year. And then I've done my postgraduate studies, like a postgraduate diploma in sports and performance nutrition. And that's with the Institute of Performance Nutrition. Again, that term performance nutrition in England. And now I'm here in Las Vegas, living it up on the strip.
Yeah, cool. So I didn't realize how close our stories matched there in terms of like, so I, same thing with me. I was doing all of these different diets because I was reading about it all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I was getting a master's degree in exercise science at the time. And I took I think I took three classes in nutrition during my master's degree, because you got to pick a minor and I chose nutrition. But I was just reading about it nonstop outside of like school. Like I was
reading
my assignments and then reading everything I could about nutrition. Then I was like, maybe I should just go ahead and switch to focusing on this instead, because it just fascinated me. So what aspect of like, what about nutrition? Was it just that it was such a mystery before? Like what caused you to be so fascinated with it?
I mean, so I was heavy as when I was younger, I was definitely heavy. We moved to America for a couple of years when I was very young, like 10, 11, and I put on a lot of weight, and everyone was like, oh, you'll grow out of it. And I did eventually, but it was just not understanding nutrition at all. When I zoom back to my time, like going into college, I just had no idea of, and I was adopting these crazy diets. But what really inspired me was seeing how simple it is, right, to take more of a moderate approach than something more extremist. And a lot of the extremist approaches, they're just coming from, I don't want to say ignorance, but just not having a full picture, you know? And I'm not going to insult anyone's intelligence and go back to like energy balance, calories in, calories out. But just having an idea of those principles has gone so far. And we hear a lot, you know, you need a college education, you need a formal education to talk about nutrition. I don't know if that's true. But when you go through formalized, and obviously, you know, you have a PhD, but when you go through like a master's or formal education, they start with the building blocks and they spend enough time on them. So you just have an idea of the principles, the biochemistry, you know, the physics in it. So that really helped. And that's kind of what fascinated me.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you notice, like when you started paying attention to your nutrition, did you notice immediate improvements?
Yes, in performance, sorry. So just a really funny story. This is before I went into that degree. We were running suicides one day and I had this friend, I always tell this story and he'll love it. He's 6'7", right? And he does jiu-jitsu and basketball, and he was on our basketball team and he had a lot of potential. He was 6'7", very, you know, into his fitness, into his health, and he studies nutrition as well. He's doing a PhD in nutrition right now. And he was always so fit. He was always the fittest on the team. But if you looked at him, you know, he didn't look athletic. He didn't run properly. He wasn't really quick or anything like that on his toes or anything like that. But he would always beat everyone in the suicides. You know, the suicides, you run up and down the basketball court, right? And there was one day we had to run like 5 in a row. If you didn't make it in the time, you'd do another one. And I sat down next to him. I was like, Colin, how the hell do you always finish first? And he's just like, it's just nutrition, man. Like, I'm just putting the right things in. And so then I became fascinated with, oh, I need to put these things in instead of take these things away. And then it just transformed. And from then on, like, I don't mind saying I was never the most skilled on my basketball teams, but I was always the fittest. From that point on, I was literally always the fittest. I played on a bunch of different teams, 2 semi-professional teams. I was always outrunning the Americans. We always had pros in, just from nutrition. It was just those things, you know, getting plenty of carbs in, not overdoing it, staying away from the fatty foods. I mean, hopefully we'll dive into some of these things.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's awesome to hear. And when the reason I ask is because when it comes to performance, like a lot of people are heavily focused on body composition changes and they take time. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to performance and like the way you feel, typically if you make some pretty drastic changes to your nutrition, you can experience those benefits like pretty quickly. And when I made pretty drastic changes to my nutrition in my, you know, early 20s and started eating, like I just went to eating a lot more nutritious diet. Like I was eating a macro friendly diet where it was just like a bunch of protein and pretty much that was it. Like just making sure that I was getting a bunch of protein in each day, and then kind of shifted to eating a lot more fruits and vegetables, having like just a much more nutritious diet. And I realized pretty quickly, like, oh, wow, the pain that I had in my knees since I was 16 years old, that is there all the time, is like slowly going away. And like over the first couple of weeks, you start to notice when you're focusing on performance and you're used to performing at like a high level, like really pushing yourself, so you know what your peak performance is, that peak performance changes like in a couple of weeks, typically, when you really shift your diet, because your body will, if you go from eating a less nutritious diet that isn't giving you the appropriate amount of energy to eating one that's giving you the appropriate amount of energy and giving you micronutrients to recover and you know, vitamin C and enough protein and all of the various nutrients, zinc and vitamin A, all the various nutrients that are required for repairing that tissue that breaks down when you're performing, it makes a difference. Like, you notice it.
Absolutely. Quickly,
and that's where I would encourage anyone to listen who's listening to this. If you have been that type of person who's been heavily focused on body composition, maybe it's a good time to kind of shift that focus a little bit with your nutrition and your exercise habits, like, and really change some of that focus towards performance. And I know sometimes, you know, this conversation is centered, people think about athletes, but really we all have a body that can become more athletic. And that is something that, like, with my training and nutrition and my lifestyle, like, that's my primary focus overall, is like really trying to stay. And when I say athletic, just, I want to be able to have endurance. I want to be able to move quickly. I want to be strong enough to do the things that are necessary. I want to have agility and quick reflexes. All of those things translate to healthy aging. And so, like, really, I always, when I think about healthy aging, it's like, you should be trying to become more athletic. And that's what's going to translate towards, you know, having better mobility, better flexibility, better strength, better endurance as you age. And these are the things that really matter in terms of the way that our body functions. So, like,
absolutely,
I would encourage people to, like, not just think about, you know, when you see or when you hear about these things and being an athlete, like, I think more people could benefit from approaching your nutrition and your training a little bit more like an athlete, to where you're focusing more on trying to build up the things that athletes work on, speed, agility, all of that stuff, because that's the stuff that matters. You know, we see a lot of this, a lot of, you know, social media is all about, you know, aesthetics and getting big and all of that stuff. But when you're 60 and 70 years old, that all that stuff's going to be gone. And what's going to be left is, do you have good cardiovascular fitness? Are you agile? Can you move around? Do you have good balance? Are you flexible? Are your joints in good health? And that stuff, you know, those are the things that athletes prioritize in training and nutrition.
Yeah. And just to say, like, I know how we can pull people into that. The term baseline comes up a lot with the clients I work with. And just as you said, the majority of people, you know, I work with are actually not athletes in any way. They're just, they have the goal of exactly what you say, to just improve their own athleticism in whatever walk of life or, you know, whatever activity they do. But their baseline shifts when they start adopting some of the techniques and strategies that we're going to talk about. They say, hey, I'm getting by fine. You know, I feel fine. I don't need a huge amount, but it's all good. Then when we start working together and they start implementing just a couple of little things, right? But consistently, that's the key, consistently. They say, I just feel so much better. My baseline is so much more improved. You know, my actual experience during the session is way better. I feel like I'm more powerful. I feel like I can do a couple of extra sets. You know, usually I walk out of the gym, you know, 45 minutes on the dot, I'm out. But I'm actually okay. I'm willing to go to 55 minutes or an hour. So these things start to improve. You know, you're not as sore after, like you mentioned, the knees. But yeah, we can dive in.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about it. So when it comes to performance nutrition, so I know the questions that I get most are like, what to eat before and after a workout. Like, I always get those questions, and I know you probably get those a lot as well, and probably also want to take a step back a little bit and look at the bigger picture as opposed to only focusing on pre and post workout. So let's talk about, like, what are the key components of performance nutrition, and then where do, like, pre and post workout nutrition kind of fit into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good point that you want to keep the big picture in mind, right? Because we could come out here and give a ton of sports or performance nutrition strategies that completely detract you from your goal of, let's say, a body composition improvement, you know? So we want to keep all of those things in mind. So we have a pyramid of performance nutrition priorities, right? And it's very similar to the fat loss pyramid or the overall nutrition pyramid. Energy is at the bottom, right? And that means it's most important. The area of that, you know, segment is the largest. And the reason is, when people are consistently under fueling for their workouts and they start eating enough, they see drastic changes in how they feel. way more than adding, you know, a supplement to your routine. The next is the macros, making sure you're getting enough protein in and around your workouts. Maybe doing a little bit of carbohydrate loading. I don't like carbohydrate loading, just building up your carbohydrate intake. Micros, like you said, getting plenty of nutrient dense foods.
Step back really quickly because the term carbohydrate loading, what does that mean?
Perfect. Okay. So we have a limited store of carbohydrates in the body, right? Well, when we break carbohydrates down, it's called glycogen. And so, you know, we store anywhere between 400 to 700 grams, depending on the size, the muscle mass of the individual. We store it in our liver and our muscle. This I describe as the high octane fuel. This is the stuff that really pushes you through high intensity workouts. So if you're working out at an intensity where you can't really hold a conversation, you're burning through carbohydrates, your glycogen. So the idea is, and there's data to show that people who go into high intensity workouts, more likely than not, they're going in with suboptimally full stores. So like less than half those glycogen stores, because low carbohydrate diets and, you know, skipping the carbs and cauliflower rice and all these things are now the rave, right? Because carbs are kind of vilified. The research shows that the more glycogen you have starting a high intensity workout. And so I'm talking about anything from, you know, your high intensity gym session, CrossFit, any kind of run. That's more than, you know, that's any run you're kind of running at a higher intensity than 60%. You need those carbohydrates, right? So the people who have the higher glycogen stores will perform better. So the idea of carbohydrate loading is maximizing those stores in the 2 to 3 days prior to, you know, an intense training, or let's say you have a 5K or a 10K, you know, an actual event. Mm-hmm. But what people were doing is the night before they were just scoffing as much carbohydrates as they could because they didn't want to eat more carbohydrates the week of. They still wanted to maintain weight and their six pack and their abs, right? So the night before they would scoff as much carbohydrates as they could. I literally used to do this, right? I used to be, when I was a rookie on that basketball team I mentioned, I would play 30 seconds if we were up by 40 points, right? So most of the time I wouldn't even play if it was a close game. Yet every night, every Friday night before our game on Saturday, me and my buddy, who is also a rookie, would eat a 16-inch pizza each. We had this like meal deal in Ireland. It was like 15 euros. You get a 16-inch pizza and all these waffle fries. And we would eat all of that because we were quote-unquote carb loading. All that does is, I mean, pizza is almost more fat than carbohydrate, right? We were just taking in a lot of fat, a lot of calories. We were getting bloated, retaining water, and feeling terrible the next day. You know, never mind not burning nearly that energy. So instead, all we say is a couple of days prior, just, you know, add an extra portion of carbohydrates with your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Add a granola bar, an extra piece of fruit in between, and you're just bumping up your carbohydrate intake as you come towards your training, you know?
Definitely, definitely. I definitely need to do that next week because I played the first basketball game that I played in years, and the second half was not good for me. First half was a lot easier. Second half was rough, but I just wasn't paying attention to my nutrition at all because it was just like an afterthought. I wasn't like, I'm going to go out there and, you know, play the best that I possibly can. It was I have a game tonight. But I do need to increase carbohydrates because I don't want to feel like that again. So what you mentioned, glycogen stores. So I want to go into a little bit more detail about that because I know some people will be confused because we talked about a lot and sometimes that's a little confusing. So glycogen is a storage form of sugar in our muscles, and it's also stored in our liver. And when we are exercising, when we start to contract our muscles very intensely, our muscles need a lot of energy, and it can't break down fat for that fuel that quickly. It's just not possible. And there's the glycogen that's in your muscles will get used up as fuel for the exercise. And then the liver glycogen will also get used up as fuel for exercise during the exercise as well. And that's why sometimes when you're doing intense exercise, your blood sugar will go up because your body's starting to break down some of that liver glycogen as well. And what Pat is saying is that if you are not consuming enough carbohydrates in your diet on a regular basis, your glycogen stores are going to be low. This is most people probably having like lower glycogen stores unless you're just overeating. But if you're trying to like pay attention to your nutrition and you're following any degree of like lower carbohydrate diet, you're going to have lower glycogen stores in your muscles that are, and that's going to impact any type of high intensity workout that you do. So if you try to go to a CrossFit session, you find that you're completely bonking out 20 minutes into it or 10 minutes into it. That could be that you just don't have enough glycogen in your system and you need to be eating more carbohydrates. And this is one of the big negatives of a lot of the people who follow low carbohydrate diets, is it's just really difficult. You can adapt to be able to train in that way. Like, your body will adapt eventually if you're low carb for a long, long period of time. But if you're just not fueling your body with enough carbs, your liver, your glycogen stores are going to be low, and that's going to impact your performance on a regular basis. So, and it's going to make exercise feel worse for you. Like, exercise is going to be a more difficult experience. Your performance is going to suffer. You go into the gym, you're going to get a couple of less reps in. You're going to be bonked out at 30 minutes instead of being able to go through a full 45 minutes to an hour session. And this is all because you're not consuming enough carbohydrates on a regular basis to sufficiently fill up those glycogen stores. So when it comes to having like full glycogen stores, how do you know that? Like, how do you know that you're eating enough carbs to fill up those glycogen stores?
That's a great question. Just really quickly, I think this is a perfect opportunity. The way you just explained glycogen, loved it. This is one of the main reasons that I recommend eating breakfast, right? So Adrian mentioned liver glycogen, muscle glycogen. You hold way more in your muscle tissue, but your liver glycogen, between 80 and 100 grams, that's what regulates your blood sugar. That's what feeds in when your blood sugar drops. When we wake up in the morning, that is low, your liver glycogen. So the ideology for eating breakfast, my motivation for getting my athletes to eat breakfast, is to help build up that store. Now, if you're eating breakfast 10 minutes before a workout, you're not going to build up that store. There's no time. That's going to go straight into the bloodstream, right? The second thing there, right, that you're mentioning, when you eat something, and we're going to talk about pre-workout ideas, right? But when you eat something that's carbohydrate-based and it's sweet, simple sugars, you're infusing sugar into the bloodstream that can be used immediately as you start your workout, which will help to preserve some of the glycogen in your muscles so you won't have to tap in and deplete that as early on. So, you know, what I'm going to tell Adrian for his basketball game, so that he doesn't bonk at halftime, he bonks halfway through the second half, is we play halves in men's league, right? There's no quarters. We're not have something right before, so that you prioritize that sugar. Then you start transitioning to the stored glycogen. Now we'll talk about something maybe at halftime, or the carbohydrate loading techniques, and then you'll be, you know, you'll be finishing the game and you'll be feeling fine. So anyway, yeah. Do you agree with that? Do you think that makes sense for people?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So in terms of keeping your glycogen stores, quote unquote, full. So you mentioned breakfast, you mentioned eating carbohydrates before the meal to preserve glycogen. Is there a certain amount of carbohydrates that we need to eat each day, like a minimum amount of carbohydrates to make sure that we're getting that? And as we're talking, I'm like, my performance is suffering in a lot of ways because of the way that I go about things. And I don't really pay attention to it that much, to be honest, because I'm going to go to the gym based on convenience. I work out first thing in the morning, never eat beforehand, and I train hard.
Yeah.
So if I eat, I actually, and we can probably, I don't want to go into too much detail, but if I have something right before that has a lot of sugar, like let's say I had, you know, a banana and some oatmeal or something like that, like some yogurt to give me a bit of carbohydrates, I will actually experience symptoms oftentimes of low blood sugar like halfway through my workout.
Yeah.
And now that you're talking about it, it's because my liver glycogen is probably not sufficiently, you know, filled up, is what it sounds like to me as I'm hearing you discuss this. Because that's the reason I don't eat, is because if I do eat right before, because I wake up and go to the gym early, if I eat right before, halfway through my workout, because I'll have like an hour workout and it's pretty intense, halfway through I'm just, I'll experience I'll be shaky, tired, like sometimes like that. It doesn't happen all the time, but it'll happen like at least 50% of the time if I have that type of snack like right before I go work out.
So what you're describing, Adrian, is what they call, I'm sure you know about it, but we need to go back to how to keep your glycogen stores full. But okay. But I want to talk about what you're mentioning, because I experience it a lot with people, right? And I think I know what it could be. But how to ensure that you're going in with full glycogen stores. So yeah, we have a range, right? And people say 50% of your calorie intake, 60%. It depends, right? Because if you're trying to lose weight, you're on less calories than you need to. So 60% of less calories doesn't really work that well. So what we say is, for most people, unless you're like an elite athlete, if you're just going to the gym, but they're intense workouts, maybe you run, maybe you go to a CrossFit class, maybe you box, maybe jiu-jitsu, basketball, whatever. I just named my things, right? But around 3 to 5 grams of carbohydrate per kg of body weight. Now I'm using the metric system because that's what we use in the research. Okay. I'm not pushing the metric system on your American listeners. So between 3 and 5 grams of carbohydrate per kg of body weight. So if I'm 80 kg, 80 times 3 is 240, right? 240 grams. So that's the lower cutoff. So you don't want to be going lower than that. Up to 8 times 5 is what? 400?
40.
40, right? 40, yeah. So 400 grams. So that's my cutoff. 250 to 400 grams. I just tell people go right in the middle.
I'm trying to do the math in my head to convert the 3 to 5 into
into pounds.
Yeah. That's like 1.4 to 2.6 or something like that, somewhere around there. Or no,
it's probably about that.
1.4.
I just refuse to do it. I tell people we're sticking with metric. It's what's in the research. Because then anytime I'm mentioning protein recommendations or anything, I always have to convert. So I just stick with the metric system, but yeah, you can easily do that. So where do I fall on that range? Because that's a pretty significant range, right? 250 grams to 400 grams a day. What are you training for? What are you loading for? If it's the start of the week, you don't have any heavy training sessions, you're on the lower end. Just make sure you're getting sufficient amount. Then as you're approaching, let's say on the weekend, you have a 2-hour, session you want to get done, or you're going on a long run, then you go to the higher end, or you can base it on your intensity. Some people, their workouts are tough for them relatively, but they're not as intense as they know they can be. So you go to the lower end, and then for people that they know they're working really hard, or you're playing a basketball game, you're going to the higher end. But the main thing is it doesn't have to be one number throughout the whole week. You determine the number, like where you are on that range. So we kind of have performance plates, right? We say if it's a day of high activity, high intensity activity, the performance plate should be half taken up with carbohydrates, right? And then on days where it's a rest day and you don't really have much going on, of course you can reduce your carbohydrate intake. You don't need to take up half your plate. You don't even have to have carbohydrates on the plate. We're getting some from our vegetables, from our drinks, things like that, our fruit, right? So you could take up most of the plate with, protein, your veggies, and your fats. So it's based on what you're asking of your body. And again, that's not just sports, that's performance nutrition.
Yeah. So if you're really going to be doing a lot of like higher intensity exercise, you want to be on that higher end, lower end if you're going to be, not so much. I need to figure all this stuff out for myself and figure out where I am, because I'm probably on the lower end. I eat probably a pretty mixed diet overall. Like I think 40% total calories from carbs, about. So I probably need to bump that up given the way that I train, because I do quite a bit in terms of like,
because you're doing boxing and basketball now,
boxing, basketball, I run, I lift.
So I
probably need to bump that up a bit, and see what that does for me. So can we try to get into this quickly? Cause I'm sure other people experience it. I know other people experience
it, as you mentioned.
So if you had a snack beforehand and you feel like, halfway through the workout, you experience like low blood sugar symptoms. So that's like coldness, shakiness, fatigue. You'll have like a cold sweat a little bit. You might feel a little bit dizzy, all of these symptoms. Mm-hmm. That's indicating that you're having low blood sugar during your workout. What could be a reason for that?
So you mentioned a good potential reason is that you ate your snack, right? And you're utilizing that kind of sugar infusion, we'll almost say. But then once you kind of get through that, which will be pretty quickly, you're relying on your liver glycogen, which might have been depleted because you're eating a low carb diet. That's one potential reason. Another is what we call rebound hypoglycemia. Okay, so let me simplify that. I know people are like, oh, Jesus, what a rebound, right? So hypoglycemia, hypo, low, right? Glycemia, low blood sugar. So some people, some athletes will have a pregame snack and it'll be sugar, right? Whether it's some low fiber fruit, whether it's a sports drink, whether it's an energy bar, like a Clif bar, or a you know, a bagel with jam, whatever, jelly, sorry, they'll get an initial bump in energy, but then immediately this insulinemic kind of compensatory response actually brings their blood sugar down to the point of like low blood sugar, and you're feeling that on the surface. So what we recommend, and it happens, I remember reading kind of the one study done in this, and it was, there's a couple more since, but 10 to 12% of the people tested experienced this, right? Mm-hmm. And so what they recommend is moving that pregame snack to right to as close to the start of the workout as you can, right? So that when you're getting, the blood sugar never has a chance to get to that that same peak, right? Because you're going to be using it. You're going to be utilizing it, absorbing it, right? And so having it right before, or just reducing the amount of sugar in your pregame snack, or maybe halving it, right? So if you, you know, if you're having a Clif Bar, have half of it 20 minutes before, and then the other half right before.
Makes sense.
So that's, yeah. So just kind of reducing the amount of sugar in it. And that actually works, because I used to experience that, and I have a bunch of people who have experienced that. And this, that technique really helps.
Yeah, it completely. I mean, I figured that was what was going on, because when you eat carbohydrates, your body releases insulin. And what I was doing is basically, because I always do it like right before I leave the house, mm-hmm. and then I got to drive to the gym. And then sometimes I like working on something and I'll have a snack, and then it's 30 minutes after. And so what's happening is my insulin and glucose is going up. The glucose is going back down because the insulin's bringing it down, but the insulin's probably still a little bit high once I start my workout. And then I'm going in and burning off all the glucose in my bloodstream, and it's just pushing it all down with that higher insulin level. That makes complete sense.
So just have it as soon as you, like, as close to the workout as you can. If you guys, the listeners, experience this, just try to close that gap, you know?
Yeah, that's perfect. Because I work out fasted now because I don't want to do that.
Oh, you don't want to? Yeah.
Yeah, I work out fasted pretty much every day because I don't want to experience that. I'm like, I can get a good training session in without eating, because I typically will have a high carbohydrate meal at nighttime.
Like,
you know, I'm usually just skip, like, that's the reason that I skip pre-workout snack, is because of this experience that I tend to have like 50% of the time when I do it. So that's great.
Brilliant. There you go. Change
that. So let's talk a little bit more about pre-workout snacks. So if someone is working out, do they need to eat pre-workout? So like we just discussed, you know, it's going to help you get a little bit of carbohydrates in your system to fuel performance. So like, does someone need to? And then what are the important factors that we want to consider when like considering a pre-workout snack or meal?
I think, so sometimes I make these videos, Adrian, where I'm like, best pre-workout snacks. And I hate myself for it, because there's such a continuum of workouts, right? There's such variation in the intensity, what you're trying to get from them. If you're going in and you're doing, you know, a bodybuilding session in the gym, and some people love training fasted, like they love waking up and going right in, maybe having like a black coffee, and they just love that feeling. Great. Like, that's phenomenal. I would implore you to try eating for like a week. It can't just be one session. Just try, experiment with eating something before. And I'll talk about my recommendations for kind of what to eat, and just see how you feel. Just see how you feel. Literally, N equals one experiment. That means it's your own experiment. And if you feel better, then you might be getting more out of your workout and actually gaining more. You know what I mean? Then what you're
feel better.
Yeah. Like, but like,
I feel better, and I know it's because I'm better fueled.
Yeah, so yeah.
Like, I've just been, for me, I didn't know the solution to it. This was simple. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I just moved my snack back. That's why it's good to go to experts. Even though I know this topic well, like nutrition, I never considered like, oh, if I just have the snack right before, that's going to prevent that insulinemic response, and I'm going to use that glucose for my exercise.
Yeah, yeah. And so I mean, pre-training, right? Most of the time, my objective is to make you feel better. It's not really to do anything physiologically, because a lot of people wake up first thing in the morning and they'll eat something and then they'll go train, right? So it's not like you're adding to your glycogen stores, like I mentioned. There's not enough time for that. You're just going to feel better. And so really interestingly, right, there's a lot of studies that have proven this, they have cyclists who are on bikes and they're doing intense training, right? But they're only doing a 20-minute time trial. So theoretically, it makes no sense to give these guys a sports drink because there's not enough time for that to be processed to form blood sugar to help them, right? Physiologically, there's no logic to that. Yet they do the studies and these people who are given the sports drink and not the placebo perform better. So the question is why? Because there's pleasure receptors in our brain that detects the sweetness and tells our body that we're less fatigued. And this is well documented. It's the mouthwash technique. So what I'm trying to do is kind of implement a form of that with morning eating before a workout. So a lot of times if you just eat something, and it doesn't have to be a bowl of sugary cereal, but if you just eat something carbohydrate based, and if there's, you know, a sweetness in there, people will feel better. They literally will feel better. They'll perform better. They'll get more reps, more hypertrophy. If we're talking about the bodybuilding goals, better gains, right? So it translates down to whatever goal you have. Being able to stay longer on the treadmill, if that's your vibe, if that's your you know, your mode of training, you burn more calories, you lose more fat. So some options I recommend, if your workout is, you know, if you have an hour or two, a bowl of oatmeal, like you mentioned, with, you know, I don't know, you could put like a little tablespoon. I put a tablespoon of protein. I don't put a whole scoop because, you know, it doesn't mix that well. I put berries in there, strawberries, and then, you know, a tablespoon of honey. And I mix that all up and that's great. Now, if I have 20 minutes before my workout, I'm looking for something less fibrous, right? Something that doesn't have to be processed as much. Because what happens when you're working out, and this is important for people that work out at a high intensity, blood is like pulled away from our intestines. So if you're going in with a belly full of oatmeal, right, our blood is being pulled away from our intestines to our muscles to provide oxygen, right? 80% of it, like 80% of the blood is pulled away, redirected. So your digestion essentially halts. And if anyone runs, they know, you know, a lot of runs are won or lost in the toilet. That's what they say. So you want to go into your workout, your high intensity workout, with as little digesting needed, right? So something like a bagel, or even half a bagel if you want to go for a full bagel, a piece of white toast. If people are doing an intense workout, I recommend a bowl of cereal. It doesn't have to be Cocoa Pops. Sometimes with my athletes, I recommend Cocoa Pops. It could be something like shredded wheat or Rice Krispies is a good one with some honey on top, or, you know, a teaspoon of sugar, a low fiber smoothie. So the reason, again, low fiber, and some tips there are like banana, strawberry, and mango. They're not no fiber, but they're generally lower fiber than some of the other things you could put in your smoothie. And that'll be digested a bit easier, you know? Mm-hmm. And low fat milk. Low fat milk if you like milk in your smoothies, because if you're having a lot of fat, that also slows the passage of food down through your digestive tract.
All right. So I just want to jump in here really quickly. We're talking about smoothies, and we're talking about a smoothie that I make on a regular basis. And if you are listening to this and you want to learn how to make smoothies that are nutritious, that are balanced, that are going to be filling, that taste good, I have a smoothie guide that you can find if you go to dradrianchavez.com. That's dradrianchavez.com/smoothie. You'll be able to get that guide there. I'll also put a link in the show notes, but I'm a big fan of smoothies. They're quick, they're portable. You can make them really nutritious. They taste pretty good if you make them correctly and you put some peanut butter. That can usually make almost any smoothie taste good. So I really recommend checking out that guide. That's dradrianchavez.com/smoothie. And you can also find information about that in the show notes.
Okay, so we want to make sure that we're getting carbs, not getting too much fat, not getting too much fiber, especially really close to the workout. So if you're eating right before your workout, avoid foods that are too high in fiber and fat, because they're going to be more difficult to digest, and that's going to cause digestive symptoms for a lot of people. And you're not even going to be able to utilize that fuel because your body isn't done digesting it by the time you start working out. So focusing more on lower fiber, higher, easily to digest, or like free sugars, like fruits are great options. Even though fruits do have fiber, the sugars in the fruits are going to be absorbed pretty quickly, typically. What about protein? Do we need protein before our workout? Is it helpful for performance, or what's the deal there?
in the pre, like in the morning, the guys, the people who work out in the morning, I don't generally recommend it. We know now, right, that we can get that first dose of protein in before or after the workout. And we have a good window of time for that, right? Assuming you're hitting, you're getting enough protein throughout the day. So it's generally accepted now that we have 1 to 2 hours before or after the workout to get that, you know, to hit that anabolic window or the anabolic garage door. That's what I call it, right? I recommend both for most people. If your workout's in the afternoon, you know, have some lean protein in your meal before and some protein in your meal after, because you have more time. So it's easier to do that. If it was 20 minutes, that anabolic window, I wouldn't recommend before and after, because you don't want a huge dose of protein 20 minutes before a workout. So, but it is fine, right? So if you can eat, I don't know, chicken, turkey, you can eat low fat yogurt, you can eat some eggs and you feel great going into a workout. You know, they're generally all lean proteins. Eggs have some fat, but they're generally all lean proteins and you feel good. That's great. Keep doing that, right? Because you're infusing amino acids, which are the building blocks of the muscle tissue, and they're going to be in your system as you're tearing down the muscle tissue. So I always frame it to athletes. It's not as simple as this, but lifting weights and you know, resistance training is kind of a catabolic activity. It almost favors muscle breakdown unless you pair it with nutrition, like a nutritional stimulus. And one of the big parts of that is amino acids. So if you can infuse them into the system before training, that's great, because they'll be in the system as you're training. And then of course after. So a lean protein, just try, you don't want something like beef or full fat yogurt or full fat cheese or, you know, creamer, just, you know, leaner proteins.
Yeah. So some lean protein, some carbohydrates, if you're eating right before your workout. If you had a meal though, let's say, for example, let's say you had a meal 2 hours before your workout, is it recommended? Like how far beforehand would you need to have a meal in order to say like, okay, I probably need a snack before my workout now?
So I recommend the last big meal before a workout in an ideal scenario is like at least 3 hours. But I know me, I can have a meal 2 hours before and I feel fine. I also know someone who can't eat within 4 hours because they feel terrible. It's individual. So again, that's why you have to experiment with different approaches. Don't listen to generic advice of like, it has to be 2 hours before. But anywhere between that 2 and 4 hour range, I would give it at least 2, if not 3 hours for your last main meal. Like main meal we're talking, right? Like a big plate, yeah. Your breakfast, lunch, or dinner. But then of course you get your snack in. I say within the hour of training.
And then right before your workout for me.
Right before your, exactly. Yeah.
As we're talking, I'm like, I think I'm going to take fruit into the gym too, like just in case. And so I can like, because I'm pretty sure it's going to help. My morning workouts don't do as well as my afternoon ones. And I'm pretty sure this is the reason.
Coming back to that, I'm sure you talk a lot about it, Adrian, that different people will genetically handle higher carbohydrate diets. Like when it comes to insulin release and the ability to process sugar, right? Mm-hmm. People are different genetically, right? Yeah, so it makes sense that people are on that continuum of when to have their pregame snack. So like any field in nutrition, don't listen to just your cookie cutter advice. Take the advice, try it, doesn't work, modify it and see how that feels. Yeah, and it's very possible that you could try the pregame snack right before and you still don't feel... Yeah, and you still don't feel great. And yeah, but hopefully you will. So you have to update everyone on one of your solo podcasts in a week or two and say, remember that podcast with Patrick?
Yeah.
I actually do feel better.
I'm going to do it every single day starting like when I start working out in the morning. I'm going to do it every single day and see how it does. I'm like I said, I'm pretty confident that's the missing piece for me. I just, I have purposefully avoided it so I don't experience that feeling, because there's nothing worse than being in the middle.
It's awful. It's awful.
Just feeling like nauseous and sweaty.
Yeah.
I just get up and leave some like half the time.
Me too. Yeah.
I just got to go, or I'll sit there for like 5 minutes and try to like, you know, like wait for my body to regulate, but definitely not a good feeling. So, we talked about pre-workout nutrition. What about post-workout nutrition? What are the priorities after the workout to help with recovery, to help with refueling the body? Like what are the things we want to pay attention to there?
So for the most part, it's just get all the building blocks like carbohydrate, you get plenty of carbohydrates in. They don't necessarily have to be simple, like sugary or refined. When I say refined, obviously I mean like white rice as opposed to, you know, whole grain rice. There is one caveat, and this is very interesting. And this is for people who train very regularly, right? They train every day, maybe twice a day. We have an hour of this optimal window. So with protein, the anabolic window of an hour isn't actually real. But with carbohydrates, it is, right? And this is, again, only important for people who train every single day, maybe twice a day. There's an hour of time right after a workout where you should try to get in some refined or even simple carbohydrates. And that's why I'm a big fan of a bowl of cereal after a workout. And a lot of my sports dietitian friends are as well. We can more efficiently replenish what Adrian was talking about earlier, that glycogen store, because it's not dependent. It's usually dependent on insulin, building up that store. It's not as dependent on insulin in that hour after the workout. It's actually around 40 minutes. That's what the studies have shown. So I recommend if you train every single day, like let's say you trained at 4 p.m., right? 4 or 5 p.m. You had like a, I'll just use my own. I go to jujitsu at 5, right? And then I know I'm going to be working out in the morning because I'm doing the 75 hard right now, day 67, right? I know I'm working out in the morning, so I want to hit that window, you know? And you don't want to have oatmeal, or it shouldn't be like brown bread or whole grains. It should be something refined, something that's going to be broken down, digested, and assimilated very quickly. And so a bowl of cereal is usually like the best bet.
When you say refined, because I know some people will say, well, you know, I don't want to really eat foods that are, you know, I want to stay nutritious. Is it, what about like fruit juice? That's fine.
Beautiful. But people would argue that that is technically processed, right? Or refined. Yeah. Fruit juice is great. Yeah.
So basically, we want carbohydrates that can get into our system very quickly. And we're not going to get that with very dense, fibrous foods like vegetables or whole grain breads and things like that. So, I'm going to start like drinking a lot more fruit juice and stuff now as we're discussing this. Because I leave the gym and I typically go home and make my son breakfast and lunch and take him to school. And then I will have a smoothie like probably an hour and a half later sometimes. Like I'm doing everything wrong when it comes to this. But I just haven't paid attention to it. And that's why it's good to have these discussions to like open the awareness of like, oh, these are just little adjustments that I need to make that are probably going to make a pretty big difference in the way that I feel. And it's not that I don't feel well on a normal basis. It's just like these minor adjustments can make an improvement for sure.
Just really quickly for people listening that, you know, you might go to the gym once a day, right? Which is very healthy. I'm not saying that you should be going more, and you might be like, all right, I don't need to be adopting these crazy strategies. But if you are losing, if you're trying to lose weight, right, you're eating less than you need. I always say timing becomes a bit more important if you're not getting the overall amount that you need. So this window, actually, even if you don't train twice a day, you should still use this window of time, that hour after the workout, because you're improving the efficiency of replenishing when the total amount isn't there. Does that make sense? Did I phrase that? Because you're not eating enough carbohydrates that your body needs, right? Because you're in a deficit, which is perfectly fine. So use that window of time.
Timing is going to allow your body to use what you're giving it more effectively so that you perform better. And so timing becomes more important. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And for me, it would just be shifting my smoothie, because the smoothie has
right after
multiple cups of fruit in there. So I'm getting, you know, 70 grams of sugar in my smoothie, typically somewhere around there, like quite a bit. And so, I just need to put that right after. Absolutely. In terms of recovery, are there any specific strategies? Let's say you do a workout, you're really sore the next day. Are there any strategies that help with that besides like overall nutrition and fueling? Like, is there any specifics? I know people sell supplements and other types of things. Is there anything that really does work?
Absolutely. And to their credit, there's a couple of supplements now that are very promising in terms of recovery. Namely, tart cherry juice is a big one, right? That we're looking at, and there's a lot of promising research on that. collagen I'll throw in there for, you know, people who have sore or injured ligaments, but you know, that's up to, the research isn't conclusive there yet. I know that some people like Lane isn't.
I covered that in the collagen episode, because there is some evidence, and I talked about this. There's a couple of studies that have shown that there's slightly lower pain with individuals with osteoarthritis. And there's probably a couple of other studies showing, you know, in athletes as well, I'm guessing.
There was just one recent study that came out that kind of threw out some of the studies that supported collagen use. But look, that's, I'm sure you've covered that in depth. But anyway, before we talk supplements, right? Sometimes I like to talk about supplements like I'm pro supplements, because I'm always condemning them on my page. Like, we don't need to go to supplements yet. Look at your nutrition strategies. But there's a time and a place, and some supplements are great, right? So we have the four R's of recovery. Rehydrate, replenish, or refuel, right? So we're talking about carbohydrates there. Obviously, rehydrate, we're talking about fluids, not just water, but fluids. Rebuild, we're talking about protein or amino acids, and rest. That fourth one is so essential. Like, a lot of people now become very obsessed with their training, and they're training multiple times a day, and they kind of develop this unhealthy relationship with it. And when they're not training, they're watching videos on different forms of training. They're talking about it. They're looking it up. Like, it's important to remove yourself from that entire world, you know, at times, just to kind of refresh, And so that's the rest piece. So it's not really nutrition at all, but rehydrate, we're talking about just getting enough fluid. And a good marker for that is make sure you're peeing like a pale yellow. So I used to throw out random numbers like 12 cups a day, 16 cups a day, 2 liters.
Yeah.
I mean, if people want some crude measurement, that I guess that would work, right? But half your body weight in ounces, there's some caveats to that too, because some people, so we did an experiment with my basketball players here in Vegas, and I weighed them before and after practice, right? And then I took into account every drop of water each person drank. And some guys lost less than a liter. Some guys lost even more than 3 liters in an hour and a half practice. Like, think about that. So let's say two guys were the same weight. Their sweat rates were extremely different. So you need to base it on your individual need. And a good way to assess that is, what does it take to get your pee pale yellow? And it doesn't have to be completely clear. That means you're actually probably drinking more than you need. It's not bad or anything, but pale yellow, like a little tint of yellow in there. Try to do your work as early in the day as you can. After your workout, get, you know, salt your meals a little bit extra. If you're sweating a lot, right? You know, if you went in and did a 20-minute arms workout, you don't need to be dousing your meal in salt. And then, so rebuild, we're talking about protein, of course. You know, so that's the third R. And just making sure you're getting a good dose of 30 to 40 grams within that window. And I like to push the before and after, you know? Yeah. But yeah, so that's the four R's. Is there, did I hit everything there?
So I have a smoothie after my workout, and I cover all of it. Like, I'm good to go now, because I get lots of fruit, the water for the hydration in the smoothie, and then the protein. So I'm good there.
The
three R's. The rest, not so good on. Definitely push it too far. I mean, for me, I just mentally have to do something in the morning.
Yeah.
When I wake up, I have to move my body. Otherwise, I'm like a little bit more anxious throughout the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit harder for me to like focus and sit down still. So that's my issue with rest. It's not even that I'm obsessed with it or trying to
control
or anything like that. It's just like, I got to do something when I wake up. So I have to like learn how to shift that to like stretching or walking sometimes and incorporate other things that aren't so demanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a healthy relationship with it, though. You know, if you need exercise to like lock yourself in for the day, I mean, that's great. That's a good sign. A lot of people struggle with that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for like 18 years, so I can't like not do it. Like,
I've woken
up and exercised for the majority of my adult life, like first thing in the morning. I just created that habit in college and have always stuck to it, and especially like with the kid, like if I don't work out in the morning, it's difficult.
Yeah, you're not getting it.
Get it done later in the day. So I just made it a habit to just get up, go work out, and just really used to that now. So you talked about salt. So when do people need to increase their sodium consumption? Because I know there's a lot, and I've talked about this. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows I've talked about this. The electrolyte craze of people taking electrolyte supplements, in my opinion, has gone entirely too far.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, when is the case where someone actually needs to take an electrolyte supplement or just use salt? Like, would you recommend an electrolyte supplement or just increase your salt consumption?
So, well, I think it's important to know where you are in terms of your salt consumption. I think that so a really good technique is to just track your, you don't even have to track your nutrition, like your calories, and but track your salt intake. How do I do that? You look at the packet, or you could use something like MyFitnessPal or any of those apps. Just for like a couple of days, eat your habitual diet. You might be completely overshooting. You might be completely undershooting. What I find is a lot of the people I work with, they actually undershoot their sodium needs. A lot of them will actually vibrate more towards being athletes, but they're also very focused on whole food approaches, right? Eating nutrient-dense foods, minimally processed. And that can actually tend to be to undershoot their salt needs because there's not a ton of salt added, which is great, right? But if you're training for 1 to 2 hours a day and you're losing a lot of sodium in your sweat, so people know that's the only like electrolyte, sodium and chloride together make salt, sodium. That's the only electrolyte we're really worried about losing in our sweat, right? We don't lose potassium or magnesium or calcium in our sweat like that, that you need to be taking these fancy, expensive electrolyte supplements. To Adrian's point, I think there's way too much of that. What you need to make sure is that you're getting enough salt throughout the day and you're getting enough of those other electrolytes. So a really good way to remember electrolytes are the EUMs, magnesium, sodium, potassium, calcium, right? You get them through your diet, whether you take a multivitamin in the morning or you just get plenty of, you know, lean meats, some red meat in there, vegetables, grains. That's how you make sure you get it. And that's how I promote, you know, a whole food diet to my athletes, because you're going to get electrolytes. But in terms of making back those sweat losses, it's primarily sodium, right? So that's why a good sports drink can help sometimes if it was an intense session. Gatorade is a really good one. Like, I'm not pushing certain things, but Gatorade has very little sodium for the amount of
that's
fluid.
What I always wondered, it doesn't have that much sodium in it. Like,
no, it's just a sugar drink.
Yeah.
But also that's too much sugar. You don't want that much sugar. So you want a perfect balance of sugar to fluid. The rationale for having sugar and sodium in your sports drink is to slow down the passage of it through the digestive tract so that more of the fluid can actually be absorbed, right? So if you have too much sugar, it'll prevent that absorption. And that's what Gatorade is. So what I recommend with Gatorade is like, just put it into 2 bottles and then cut it with water, fill up half of it with water. You know, and then you could even put a little pinch of salt in it, and then you have 2 homemade energy drinks for $2. You know, how much does a big thing of Gatorade cost? Yeah. Sadly, it's like $2, right? But Gatorlyte and Body Armor are really good ones. And I will say, in terms of electrolyte mixes, Liquid IV is a good one. Yeah. And
of the ones that I've seen, that's the one that is the best formulated. It only has half a gram of sodium. Has a decent amount of potassium in there as well, which a lot of people aren't getting enough of. You should be getting enough potassium
exactly.
in your diet, but people don't eat enough fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and beans to get enough potassium. So the average American, 90% of Americans don't eat enough potassium. So that's where the liquid IV one is the only one that I've seen where I'm like, I'm kind of okay. Like, this one makes a little bit more sense because it has a little bit of potassium in there as well.
A little bit of sugar, like 10 grams of sugar, I think. That's what you want. You know, that's a perfect recipe. The sugar, the sodium, potassium, and, you know, you're off.
All right. So I want to close out the episode, but I want to give you an opportunity because you talked about supplements. So what I want to do is let's close it out with something that I thought of when you were saying that. Let's give the top 5 sports nutrition supplements that actually work that people can
take. Okay. So we'll skip protein because obviously everyone knows the benefits of protein, right? It's just a dietary source of protein. So we'll skip that. Creatine is so important.
That was coming up first.
Yeah, like it's literally the most supported sports supplement. But like the research is now spanning outside of just performance, and they're looking at cognitive function. They're looking at, you know, prevention of like falls in the elderly. It's crazy. So Adrian, you have to have Scott Forbes on. He's awesome. And you can literally sit down with him for an hour and ask every question about creatine. He's on almost every publication. He's the coolest guy ever too.
Yeah.
Cool. Reach out, you look.
Some of those studies about with the elderly, that's some interesting stuff where they, you know, improves like muscle function with just supplementation with creatine.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one I would recommend is if we're looking at performance, let's look at like a kind of like a pre-workout ingredient, nitrates, right? So nitrates are these molecules you get in beetroot or beets, and in the body, they'll be processed to something called nitric oxide. Stay with me now, guys. I know we're getting...
I talked about this in the blood pressure episode. So people...
Perfect.
I've gone into detail about this a little bit in a recent episode on blood pressure.
Great. And that's why it's great as well, because it's not like a pre-workout with tons of caffeine where you're taking a supplement that might improve your performance but might negatively affect your health. With nitrates, it's improving your performance and potentially improving your metabolic health, like your blood pressure. Yep. So basically, they just, as your listeners might know, they help dilate the blood vessels, which can improve oxygen delivery, right? Which theoretically can improve your performance, right? However, the main mechanism of how it works is actually, they believe it's antioxidant effects. And at the end of all of these, it reduces the oxygen cost of intense exercise. Right. So this is something that, you know, whether you get it in beets, nitrates are in leafy greens, but we would have to eat a lot of them to get enough to have a performance benefit. So there's some pre-workouts actually, like low caffeine pre-workouts that have nitric oxide precursors in there. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's just getting in depth.
So when you say nitric oxide precursors, what are those?
L-arginine and L-citrulline. So you'll actually see these in a lot of pre-workouts, and that's because they are not nitric oxide precursors. So in the body, they'll combine to form nitric oxide, which can definitely help your high intensity performance.
So as we're talking about supplements and supplements that can be beneficial for pre-workout, this is a perfect time to discuss the pre-workout supplement that I personally use and that I enjoy and recommend. So I use a brand called Legion. I've been using them for years, and I've used them for a variety of reasons. They use quality ingredients. They put the right doses in their supplements, and everything is third-party tested as well. So their pre-workout that I use is called Pulse. Pulse has what we were discussing, the citrulline. It also has caffeine. So if you take a full 2 scoops of Pulse, which is what it recommends, it's 350 milligrams of caffeine. That's probably too much. I only do 1 scoop, and that's 175, and then that'll give you, I think it's a 4 grams of citrulline. You also get what's called beta alanine, which can help with performance a little bit. We didn't discuss it in this episode. You also get L-theanine, which can help with focus. And this is why I like this pre-workout. For me, it just tends to help me focus better when I'm working out. And I think it's the combination of the caffeine and the L-theanine. So I definitely personally recommend this one if you're looking for a pre-workout. You don't necessarily need a pre-workout, but it can enhance performance. I don't always use one, but it does help me. I get a little bit of a better workout. It helps keep me a little bit more focused throughout my workout. And really another reason that I do it is because it helps me dose caffeine appropriately, so I can know that I'm taking about 200 milligrams of caffeine as opposed to drinking a coffee and having really no idea how much caffeine I'm taking in. So that's another reason that I personally do it. As I mentioned, Legion has what's called a Pulse, and then they have the Pulse Stim Free, which has no caffeine in it. So sometimes what I do is I'll do 1 scoop of the Pulse, so I get my 175 milligrams of caffeine, and then I'll do a full scoop of the Pulse Stim Free so that I can get the rest of the other nutrients as well. Because the citrulline, everything is going to be half dosed. It's still enough to be effective, but if you want to really get the most effective benefit, you're going to have to go up to the full dose with the citrulline, the beta alanine, the L-theanine. And in that case, unless you want to take in 350 milligrams of caffeine, which I don't recommend for most people, unless you're a larger person and this is the only caffeine you're taking in throughout the day and you have pretty high tolerance, I would go with only about 1 scoop of the Pulse. And then if you want to fully dosed, go with the full scoop of the pulse stim free as well and just get both. And they'll last you twice as long because you're only using half of a dose of each. So it's the same as just buying, you know, one and kind of using it and then having to buy another bottle. So if you want to check out that pre-workout supplement, you can go to legionathletics.com. It's called the Pulse Pre-Workout. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you use the code Chavez at checkout, you'll get 20% off your first order. And then after that, you'll get double points on your purchases. So when you purchase anything from Legion, you accumulate points and then you can get free products with those points that you accumulate. So you'll get double on those points in the future when you use the coupon code, and you'll get 20% off on that first order. And they see that people are purchasing through me and I get a little bit of an incentive as well. And so you help support the show while also using something that's going to be beneficial for you, because truly I have used this for years before I had any relationship with them. So we'll get back to the show. Just wanted to put that in there.
Okay, so that's two.
So we have creatine, we have beetroot or other nitric oxide precursors. What's number three?
So with the beetroot, I just have a condensed beet powder. That's what I use. I put that in my smoothie. And that's what, so that's what you can use as well. I get this thing. It's like this organic beetroot powder. It's like $15. It lasts me for like 2 months, and it's, that's condensed. And so it should give you a good amount of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it standardized to like the amount of like, you know, active compounds or anything like that?
That's the thing I'm trying to figure out. Like, how much do I need to get, you know what I mean? Saying? Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
That's why I go with, L-citrulline is because we have studies on knowing how much we need.
Because
I've done the beetroot before, and I've used different products, and there's no precision behind it.
How much do we need?
That's the challenge for me.
For sure. I just like not – sometimes I like not living off all these different supplements, but you're 100% right. Like, objectivity is needed. Okay, so that's two. Three is like, if we stay in the pre-workout, and then I'll do two recovery. I'm not going to go collagen. I'm going to go caffeine, right? But not too much caffeine. A little, like, some of the studies that look at caffeine for performance, caffeine is right under creatine, guys, just so people know, in terms of like ergogenic benefits or performance enhancing benefits. It's very well studied across the board. I see Adrian sipping on his coffee. I finished mine. It can improve reaction times. It can improve alertness. But here's the cool thing. It actually helps endurance. So you wouldn't think that, right? You would think it helps in like intense, short, you know, short duration sports, like lifting one rep max and stuff like that. It actually helps endurance athletes. And the studies show that the longer the duration, the more benefits you can get from caffeine. So that's interesting. But just, again, you have to run your own experiments. And some people react really poorly to, you know, 100 milligrams. And some people can handle 300 milligrams, you know? So, which I obviously don't recommend in a single dose, of course. 1 to 200 milligrams, you know? Okay, so that's three. Now let,
200 milligrams before the workout is like basically what I do, and it makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's kind of my go to as well. Two recovery is tart cherry juice. Really quickly, I know we're running up on time, but tart cherry juice, basically when you lift or when you train at high intensity, there's a certain amount of inflammation caused. Our initial thought was we want to eradicate that inflammation as soon as possible. Totally. That's not what we want to do, because some of that inflammation will actually stimulate muscle protein synthesis. It'll stimulate your improvements in your cardiovascular activity or cardiovascular fitness, right? We want some of that inflammation. So we want to bring it down to optimal levels. The way to do that is go for food first sources of antioxidants, not something that's like kind of like an artificial supplement that's loaded with antioxidants. Vitamin so tart cherry juice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So tart cherry juice, which comes from Montgomery tart cherries, has been shown in the studies to bring levels down without disrupting those adaptive effects or those adaptive processes. And the research in tart cherry juice is pretty promising. So that's after. And then ashwagandha. I'm a fan of ashwagandha.
Ashwagandha. And with the tart cherry juice, after the workout, like right after the workout, is a good time to take it?
Within an hour. Yeah, within an hour.
Is that a supplement or can you drink the juice?
The juice is very expensive for this bottle, it's $12. I recommend the supplements.
It's not so bad here.
Really?
I can get 46-ounce bottle. I think it's 46 or something like that. Okay. Maybe even up 64 it's like 46. They changed it from like 64 to these random numbers. That's what I give my son. At night, he likes to have like popcorn and watch like a show. Like, that's our night ritual. And I give him juice with like, I cut it with carbonated water, and it's just
nice a spritzer.
We had tart cherry juice at night with carbonate. Well, we both do, and that's like our nighttime drink. And the reason that I do tart cherry juice is because of this research. And there's actually good research for pretty much all of the dark colored fruit juices. So like grapes and berries and cherries and pomegranates. Pretty much all of them have these antioxidant, anti-inflammatory properties that can have some beneficial effects. I think tart cherry juice, the marketing behind it, they're like, all right, we can turn this into a performance supplement, because I'm pretty sure we can do this with like grape, concentrated grape juice extract as well, like, and use that, turn that into.
I'm sure. Yeah.
It's just like these high nutrient, they're called anthocyanins, these dark colored pigments in the cherries and grapes and blueberries and all that. If we have a lot of those, they have these anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties that can help with recovery. So that's one of the reasons, another one of the reasons that I have a smoothie afterwards is to get all of those micronutrients from the berries, so that I can get some of these anthocyanins to potentially have some of that effect. The last thing you mentioned, ashwagandha, what does that do?
So it's an adaptogenic herb, and basically what they see is, now you might have looked into this a bit deeper, but from what I know, it's an anxiolytic supplement. So instead of directly reducing levels of anxiety, it can help your body deal with anxiety and stress better. So it reduces the physical toll, the negative toll that higher levels of anxiety and stress can have on the body, right? But in the studies that I've seen, there's one really good one where they tested different doses. I think it was, 250 milligrams, 600 milligrams, and then a higher dose. And they found that the middle, the 600 milligrams, was the optimal. Yeah. But they did find that it reduced perceived stress. Mm-hmm. So, not just anxiolytic, it can actually help that surface level stress as well. But I like to use that with athletes as part of that kind of rest and recovery routine. You know what I mean? But I don't recommend it to people who aren't really looking into it. If people kind of approach me with it, I'll inform them around it. I'm very careful about adding supplements in, because, if I'm working with people, sometimes we're taking whey protein, creatine, fish oils, vitamin D, so sometimes I'll be careful with the amount we're throwing on them.
Yeah. I completely agree there. I've read that research. I agree. So there's also some studies that show that it can reduce cortisol a little bit. Also, and it's thought to be potentially because of that, can slightly increase testosterone a little bit in some studies as well. But this is only in individuals who are like under high levels of stress. So as you mentioned, it helps with dealing with high levels of stress from a physiological perspective for some reason. This supplement, the research, when we say, it helps to reduce stress, you have to take that into context. It's not like eliminating stress. A little bit better. I've experimented with this. I can probably tell a difference. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure. I need to be like in a placebo study to know for sure if it's making a difference. But these, like you mentioned, these are things that, they show benefits, but they're probably further down the list of priorities, and you want to focus on some of the things that we discussed, particularly what the entire episode was about, which is lifestyle and your overall habits, because these performance supplements, as we mentioned, they can help. But really getting your lifestyle dialed in is going to make the world of difference. Like, really eating the right amount of protein, calories, carbohydrates, that's what's really going to change things. So I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom. I feel like this was a little bit of a session for me in terms of like learning about what I need to be changing for my own nutrition. So I really appreciate that.
You better update people on how that journey is going with all these tips.
I will. I appreciate you coming on, and
absolutely
to bring you on for another episode to cover some additional topics if we have questions from here.
Anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. Thanks, man.